Hi.
Siri. Welcome to High Theory.
In this podcast, we get high on the substance of theory.
I'm Sharunik Boshu.
And I'm Kim Adams.
We are two tired academics trying to save critique from itself.
Today I am here with Adrienne Rafel, and she's going to tell us about crosswords. Adrienne, can I ask you to introduce yourself to our listeners?
Sure. I'm Adrienne Rafel. I am a lecturer currently in the Princeton Writing Program.
Awesome. And I hear you have written a book about this subject.
I have written a book about crosswords, which I still have to sort of say with a laugh every time.
Are you getting tired of laughing about it? Is it like, oh my God, I wish people would stop making fun of the crosswords?
You know, never, because I love the crossword, and I also think it's crazy that I've written a book about the crossword and spent so much of my life with it. But on the other hand, you know, I am really glad I did.
Okay, so tell us then, what the heck is a crossword?
All right, so a crossword puzzle, you can think of it as having two main components, right? It's got the grid and it's got the clues.
Yeah.
And then the grid is where you fill in the answers, the words. So it's a visual puzzle, but it's much more of a verbal puzzle, right?
Yeah.
The words that go into the grid, they're called the fill.
Okay.
In American-style crossword puzzles, the grids are symmetrical, and they're such that every square has to check across and down. So you can't just have, like, letters floating randomly. Every letter is going to be part of a clue that goes across and part of a clue that goes down.
So are there other styles of crossword puzzles?
The two main strands of English language crosswords, and English is actually the dominant language of crosswords. There are crosswords in other languages. There's a sort of robust French crossword community, Italian crossword, but the most widespread and widely played crosswords are in English. And those crosswords split into two main categories, which are American style, which if you close your eyes and think of the New York Times crossword puzzle, like that's an American style crossword. British style crosswords, they look slightly different visually. They're actually not symmetrical. The clues feel very different because a British style clue is what's called a cryptic crossword. So cryptic crosswords mean that every single clue has two layers to it. It's got a layer that's going to like lead you to the answer, but it's got another layer wrapped on top of it. That's a wordplay layer.
Okay.
And sometimes the wordplay layer is actually 25 different layers. It's like so many different layers to get to your answer at the end. I can give a brief example of a British cryptic if that's useful.
Yeah, definitely.
So the clue is pretty girl in crimson rose. And you actually know that it's 8 letters. It tells you that your answer is going to be 8 letters. And the answer, I'm just going to give, unless you do know the answer.
I have no guesses. I'm terrible at crossword puzzles. I just like have no capacity for it. So pretty girl in crimson rose.
Rose, R-O-S-E.
Crimson rose.
Pretty girl in crimson rose. I am terrible at cryptics and I find them like astoundingly cool. So the answer is rebelled. R-E-B-E-L-L-E-D.
Oh, because it's a bell. Is the pretty girl.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But what's the crimson rose?
So get this. So crimson is, if you think of rebelled, R-E, and then bell, and then D.
Right.
R-E on the one end, D on the other end. So red. So crimson. So it's a pretty girl in crimson. So the bell is inside red.
Mm-hmm.
And then rose is also nice because like crimson rose kind of gets red as well. But then rose is an uprising. Rose in the sense of you rebelled against something. So pretty girl in crimson rose means rebelled.
Wow, that is really hard.
And that's not even the hardest. That's like,
oh, man.
That's like a level 3 or 4 out of 10.
Okay, I want to know about those levels, but I also want to know how the different styles developed. Like, how did you end up with these two different modes?
I'll just take you a little bit back into crossword history. So the crossword was invented in 1913, which to me feels wildly new. When I went into this research, I expected crosswords to be like ancient Rome. Caesar's doing a crossword. Word squares have been around forever, and acrostics have been around forever. There's complex acrostics in the Bible. So like there's word games, of course.
Yeah.
Even like word square and kind of grid games have been a thing forever. The crosswords innovation was actually technological. Like printing an empty grid became a lot easier to do in the early 20th century. The innovation was, let's print an empty grid and let's also then print clues next to it that you can like figure out how to fill that empty grid. The editor who comes up with this, his name is Arthur Wynn. He called it a word cross puzzle. Some like typesetter actually like crossed the words to get to crossword.
Nice.
Printing it in this way was his innovation. He needed to fill space for the Christmas edition. He prints this thing. It becomes a hit. It becomes super popular in America in 1924 when the first book of crossword puzzles gets published and is actually the first ever book that Simon & Schuster published.
Huh.
And it became incredibly successful. It was just like sold out in crazy numbers overnight. This book became a huge fad in 24, and people in England had already been doing the crossword, but the book took the crossword from a more national American thing to international. When England got a hold of the crossword puzzle, they're like, well, this is sort of easy and dumb. They're like, we can do better. There's this guy named Powan Mathis. He adopted a like crossword name. He called himself Torquemada as to be like the torturer. He's like, I'm going to make like the most torturous puzzles. We love that.
Okay.
So he developed this style of crossword cluing that emphasized wordplay in the clues and de-emphasized the visual symmetry. And in America, that impact of the grid and being able to solve a puzzle by crossing letters in the grid became something that was really prioritized, and they deprioritized the like intense wordplay cluing.
So you've given us one like really great example of the cryptic style. Can you give us an example of an American style clue?
Yeah, I'll give you an example. Cluing is one of the main ways that you take a crossword and you can dial up or dial down the difficulty of it.
Oh, okay.
So for example, the word bacon. So if you think of the word bacon, right, that's your answer.
Okay.
A clue that's a pretty easy American style clue for bacon would be fried pork thing for breakfast. That'd be like a terrible clue, but you get it, right?
Yeah.
Another pretty easy fill in the blank kind of clue. Okay, here's like a trivia thing, Sir Francis blank. Then a slightly more difficult clue would be brings home the blank or something to do with money, right? And we're thinking about bacon in a slang way. American clues, when you get sort of a middle level clue, it's often got a little bit of a riddling quality.
Okay.
Here's a hard American clue. Strips in a club, question mark. So you're like, strips in a club, I'm thinking about something that's like, but then you realize, okay, club in this clue means club sandwich. And strips is a noun, not a verb. And the question mark tells you that you're looking for something kind of cheeky or like,
okay.
The question mark tells you that the clue is trying to throw you a little bit off guard. And okay. So you're primed to think, where is that leading me? So a club sandwich, then strips in a club sandwich or bacon.
Yeah.
That kind of wordplay is pretty common in American style crosswords. Hard American clues are more of this like punny variety. British clues have puns, but often they're like puns that are so intricately based on very specific ways of pronouncing things, depending on what county you're from outside London. It's like, ah! You can know it if you like learn all the code stuff. But American crosswords, like,
yeah.
There's like things to know about crosswords and ways to get better at them, but there aren't these like very particular codes.
This seems like a good moment to move on to our second question.
Okay.
Which is, how do I use a crossword?
I think I'll give you a few ways to use it in your daily life that you might not think about. there's sort of a stereotype around the crossword that my grandmother, my great aunt enjoys doing the crossword in their spare time, right?
Yeah.
And that is true. But also the crossword has actually like really interesting solitary and social functions. The crossword's made this like very successful jump to the phone. Mm. There are millions of people who play the crossword on their phones. The crossword's always been a really great thing to do to fill spaces that otherwise aren't filled, either because you're in a waiting room or you're commuting. Now it's like a thing on my phone, but not tied to social media. And it also can be a great social thing of the crossword is something to talk about in a shared space that provides a way of communicating that is separate from, I just have to make small talk about something I don't know what to talk about with strangers or with people you know really well. It's close friends and family can also be like hard to really approach things. So the crossword is a really great present ground to start talking about something, communicating. And then maybe it opens up different pathways too. It's definitely going to open up different pathways. The crossword's got the whole world wrapped in it, right?
All right. Well, let me ask you our last question. How will crosswords save the world?
I'm going to again approach that through history and thinking about when are crosswords extremely important? And that I think will lead into how they save the world, because crosswords are actually fantastic in times of crisis. The New York Times started printing its crossword on the eve of World War II. Right after the bombing of Pearl Harbor, an editor sent a memo to the publisher like 17 days later that was like, dude, people are just reading about like bleak thing after bleak thing after bleak thing. We need something in our paper that is not just like terrible. We need a crossword because a crossword is a place where people can escape. But it's not such an escape that it's totally artificial, completely removed from everything. A crossword is porous. It has to engage with the world because the clues have to have some sort of cultural reference, and crosswords engage with the world maybe even a lot more than you think. And crosswords provide certainty. That's one thing that they can do. They provide certainty with uncertainty baked into it. Like, you know that the crossword has an answer. You also know what kind of like emotional journey you're going to go through. It's like, okay, I'm going to enter into this. I'm going to not know how to solve this. I'm going to get a few of them. I'm going to like, I know this thing here. I'm going to figure this other thing out. I'm going to ask my friend. I'm going to ask Google secretly, whatever. I'm going to go from a place of confusion to a place of certainty. And I'm actually going to go through some frustration and go through some anger, but then I'm also going to get to triumph at the end. So it's not just I'm going to zone out with an adult coloring book and a glass of wine. Like, I think that's a great activity too, but it's a very different kind of release than the like Aristotelian journey and actually like come out at the end triumphantly with my completed crossword, right?
Oh man, I love the idea of it being an Aristotelian journey. Now we're living up to our name of High Theory.
This is my pet theory about crosswords that I I only bring to you.
Yeah, and I totally see that, right? Like, I see the reward of putting the world in order in those boxes. Yes. You need the struggle in order to get that reward of the pleasure of each thing in its place and all of the intersections working and, like, yeah.
Precisely. You need the struggle and you get the, like, and putting the world in order is so satisfying and filling in those boxes is so satisfying. And I think, like, especially now, things are always uncertain, but especially when, like, really nothing's certain and everything is kind of shifting and changing all the time, the crossword's like, great, we have boxes there, we can put things in order, this is fantastic.
Yeah, and like, definitely in a time of crisis, we like to imagine that crises will be sort of quick and done. But it's becoming more and more apparent that the crises of systemic racism, of the current pandemic, of climate change, those are going to be slow as fuck, man.
Slow and continuous and like just actually never ending.
And we'll probably need some crosswords to do while we're stuck in them.
Might as well, dude.
Well, thank you so much for coming and talking with us. It's been awesome.
It's been so much fun.
And thank you for listening to High Theory.
If you like our podcast, please review and subscribe on Spotify, iTunes, Patreon, or wherever you get your podcast fix.
Sharonic Bosu manages our social media presence. Owen Quinn composes our theme music, and Kim Adams and Sharonic Bosu edit our audio.
You can also find us at hightheory.net.
We hope you have a highly theoretical day.